The following program is being brought to you on the Voice America Health and Wellness Channel. For more information about our network and to check our additional show hosts and topics of interest, please visit voiceamericahealth.com. The Voice America Talk Radio Network is the worldwide leader in live internet talk radio. Visit voiceamerica.com. The views and ideas expressed on the following program are strictly those of the host or guests and do not necessarily reflect the views and ideas held by the Voice America Talk Radio Network, its staff, and management.
It's hump day. So why does it feel like frump day? Are you barely making it through the week with no energy to speak of? That's all about to change. Welcome to Transforming Health with Brad King. Get ready to live with the vitality, youthfulness, and abundant energy you've always dreamed of. Now, here's your host, Brad.
Hey everyone, welcome to the show. Why are so many people sailing at half-mast these days? Worse yet, how many of these people have been living this way for so long, they don't remember what optimal health and vitality even feels like anymore? Too many individuals suffer from a condition of acceptance. They're guilty of accepting their less than healthy status as the way it is. Unfortunately, they don't know any other way to be. Well, not anymore, because you've come to the right place. Welcome to Transforming Health. I'm Brad King, your host, and this is the platform that helps change lives one body at a time. Let's face it, fad diets are nothing more than short-term solutions to what is commonly known as a lifelong problem. And by the way, that lifelong problem is called, you're right, obesity. Time to wake up and smell the bacon. We are an ever-expanding nation of fat people. To just say we're overweight or we weigh too much or I need to lose some weight is never going to solve the problem. When we go on diets, most of us become nothing more than smaller versions of our former fat selves. We fit into smaller clothes but are no closer to being fit and healthy. I coined this phenomenon as the smaller fat person syndrome in my book Fat Wars over 10 years ago. It's time to change our perception of reality. We are a nation of overfat people. We are not overweight. And even though many people think that you become fat when your weight rapidly swells like a balloon, the reality is that most people accumulate body fat little by little, year by year, until suddenly they're overfat and trying not to look at their reflection or wondering why the stairs are harder to climb. Piling on fat at the rate of a few ounces a month makes actually determining whether you are out of shape a legitimate challenge. There was actually a study from Northwestern University. The researchers in Chicago recently found that about a quarter of obese people either don't realize their size or don't admit it on a questionnaire. You see, we often hear about obesity in the news, and we know it's a growing health problem, yet we use a different pair of eyes when we look at ourselves. And this is something I actually call fat blindness. We have become so fat that researchers now say that the problem of obesity, particularly in Western countries, now outweighs the problem of starvation. As a planet, we're eating ourselves to early graves and have reversed the trend of modern science to elongate the lifespan. The current youth of North America are the first generation expected to have a shorter lifespan than their parents. That's appalling. Today we are going to learn the secrets the diet industry and especially the government does not want you to know about fat loss. How to finally lose the fat by actually eating more of it. I'm talking about fat, that is. Fat doesn't make you fat. My guest today is a former professor of exercise physiology and nutrition and the nutrition coach to many high-performance athletes, including several Canadian Olympic teams. He is the president of Lean Seekers International, and he is the nutrition coach for the endurance program called Critical Speed. Please welcome the best-selling author of the book, Fat Won't Make You Fat. We have Dr. Lee Coyne with us. Dr. Coyne, welcome to Transforming Health. Dr. Coyne, are you with us?
I'm still here.
Well, welcome to the show. I wanted to start off by asking you, you know, what inspired you to write this book, Fat Won't Make You Fat? And, you know, tell us, why is this not just another diet book?
Well, I like the concept of that you had mentioned in your introduction, is that diets are just that. They're short-term programs that have nothing to do with lifestyle. In fact, they're most of them make you kind of hungry and angry, and you can hardly wait to get off of them. But the inspiration for the book actually came from a couple of former students who I now regard as colleagues, because they're basically in the same profession as you and I are. And we had seen this going on for quite some time. And I guess the simple logic was that North Americans eat less fat than they have ever eaten in the history of the world, and yet we still double obesity every 5 years. And it became fairly obvious that fats could not be the problem. The second part of it is a physiology answer. And many people have this misconception that carbohydrates or sugars are your source of energy. Our children need them because they need the energy because they're so active and things like that. But in physiology, there's a simple measurement called the respiratory exchange ratio, which tells you that how much oxygen you use versus how much carbon dioxide you produce, and that can be tracked back to whether you're burning fat or carbohydrate. And the reality is, sitting and doing what you and I are doing right now, unless you had a Coke in the last half hour, 85% of our energy right now is coming from fat. About 2 hours after you go to bed at night, while you sleep all night, 85 to 90% of your energy comes from fat. It's the energy source of choice from a resting and mildly exercising body.
So Dr. Coyne, this is interesting, because a lot of the listeners, you've heard of this, I've heard of this before, the term that you're really only as good as your last meal, hormonally speaking. What you're talking about, what you've really laid out very well, and very layman-friendly, may I add, in Fat Won't Make You Fat, is, you know, how everything is controlled by the hormones and the enzymes and the biochemistry of the human body, but we're the ones responsible for basically creating whatever that atmosphere is. It's either an atmosphere that's conducive to storing fat and creating lousy forms of energy, or an atmosphere that would be conducive to using fat, as you mentioned, 85, maybe 90% of the time, and in the process, feeling like we really should feel, and that's very energetic. Is that correct?
That's absolutely correct, yes. And there is the conventional wisdom that goes on that emphasizes that, oh, you need a certain amount of carbohydrates to feed your brain, because that's all the brain operates on, is basically glucose or blood sugar. But what they fail to recognize is that we have several mechanisms that convert fat and protein to blood sugar and keep our blood sugar quite adequate for the brain.
Right.
And you might ask the question, you know, if everybody needs sugar or carbohydrates, how did the Eskimos even survive this long? Because they had no source of carbohydrates.
Right.
That's a misconception. There is no recommended daily allowance or nutrient intake or daily value for carbohydrates. You can live fine without them.
Okay, so what you brought up at the very beginning, we're eating less fat than we have probably since, you know, the beginning of time, so to speak. But, you know, it's very well documented. This has been spoken about by a lot of researchers now, that if you go back, and I know, you know, obviously you'll remember this, you're a little older than I am, but I'm certainly not young, chronologically speaking, anymore. So I remember, you know, when I was a kid and I would go shopping in the grocery stores, and I would be able to actually buy foods like cookies that actually had fat in them. They tasted good.
Yeah.
They were real treats. They had fat. it's hard to find those foods now. You walk down the center aisles of your grocery store, you find low fat, you find no fat. We created that 30 years ago, and yet when people started to eat the low fat, no fat foods and lowered their fat intake, the obesity rates skyrocketed by 50 to 60% in the next 10 years.
Absolutely.
Doesn't that tell us what's going on?
Yeah, it's the catchphrase I use is that we're living in carbohydrate hell and it's creating insulin disasters, and that's exactly where it's coming from. And people are still walking down those aisles and buying all that low fat, no fat everything's, but that's not the way nature built anything.
Right, and it should tell us something when there's no recommended daily allowance for carbohydrates. We have recommended daily allowance for protein.
Yeah.
We have an RDA for fat, but why don't we have an RDA for carbohydrates?
Yeah, and that's because deep down, the people that make those kinds of tables recognize that we can get by without it.
Okay, so so there's a lot of people out there. Let's look at vegetarians for a second, because there's a lot of vegetarians that you look at that are vegetarians for one or two reasons. They're either a vegetarian because for ideological reasons, you know, they just do not want to touch anything that's an animal. These are vegans, or they're a vegetarian because perhaps they feel it might be a healthier way to eat. Whatever reason you're a vegetarian, there are a lot of vegetarians that walk around that are overweight or carry too much fat around. And, you know, a lot of people would argue that fact because they would say, well, you can't be fat if you're a vegetarian because you're not having the same fats that the majority of the population has. So why are there so many overweight vegetarians?
And, well, once again, it comes to the carbohydrate content of their diets. And they're... I have not analyzed vegetarians carefully, although I've seen what you're talking about very, very obviously. But I'm sure that what part of it is that there are vegetarians who eat far too many breads and grains as part of the vegetarian diet versus enough colorful fruits and vegetables. So they probably have less chance of this excess fat if they would eat more colorful fruits and vegetables and high-fiber vegetables particularly. But when they eat the refined grains, which is still in the vegetarian diet, then they end up with these insulin disasters because their blood sugar... So it's the old glycemic index that some people talk about.
Right.
It's that blood sugar rises way too quickly. That brings out the insulin, which is the fat storage hormone, and they're into fat storage right away.
Okay, we're going to talk about that on the second,
sure,
when we come back from this next break, because I really want to set that up, and I want people to understand, you know, what is this chemistry that's going on that's making so many of us fat, and not only making us fat, really creating an atmosphere where it's like people are pulling their hair out because they've been on their 10th or 20th diet, and they don't know what to do to get rid of the fat. It doesn't seem anything they do is actually going to work. But just before I go there, I just want to talk about something. I have three professionals that I've just taken on as clients, and I don't usually do this very often, but these are very well-known people, and I took them on as a client, and I do pretty much what you do when you do a nutritional consultation. I look at their food plan, and, you know, so the first thing I say to them is, we're gonna do away with all of the grains for the next month. We're just going to do away. We're going to see what happens with your body. And there's silence on the phone because there's almost a horror where people go through this withdrawal where they don't understand. And a lot of people will actually say, well, what the heck am I supposed to eat if I can't have any bread?
Right, yes.
Now that's right at the top of our food pyramid. It you know, this is what is ingrained in us. No pun intended.
Yeah.
Ingrained in us. Since we're in elementary school, you know, when we're taught about dietetics and the foods we eat, we're taught about having grains as the staples of our diet. So don't you think all of this lie, so to speak, is really starting right at the elementary level?
Oh, it starts at a very, very fundamental level. And, you know, I live on the prairies and the grain farmers don't like me very much because I talk like this. if we talk about the history of man... the use of grains was introduced by the Egyptians approximately 10,000 years ago. And they were the ones credited with inventing agriculture. And they grew the grains to feed their livestock, so they didn't have to chase around the country keeping their livestock alive. And then a little later on, they started to find ways to use it themselves. So, and that's fundamentally where it started. However, our genetic makeup is much older than 10,000 years.
Right.
And there's where the difficulty comes in. We've tried over the last 10,000 years to convert man to an animal, you know, a ruminant's diet of using grains, and it has been basically failing miserably.
It's been disastrous.
You know, yeah, Gary Taub, that wrote the book Good Calories, Bad Calories, makes the emphasis that the major change in the last 2 million years in the human diet has been going from a carbohydrate poor diet to a carbohydrate rich diet.
Right.
Step two was the massive increase in refining those carbohydrates over the last 200 years. And then, of course, step three is the excessive consumption of high fructose corn syrup over the last 20 years.
Yeah, and we're going to talk about that as well.
Yeah.
When we come back on Transforming Health with Dr. Lee Coyne, we're going to be talking more about his book, Fat Won't Make You Fat. And we're going to set this up as we come back. You can take notes if you'd like. Dr. Coyne is going to explain exactly how a food that doesn't even contain fat becomes fat within the body. And here's something to think about while we go to this break. We've all heard the thing called the French paradox, where the French are significantly less afflicted than Americans or North Americans with heart disease. They don't have nearly as much diabetes or obesity and even cancers. And these are conditions that are allegedly produced by an excessive fat intake. Yet, the French and the people in the Mediterranean, they eat comparable amounts of meat. They eat pretty much the same amount of fish. Yet, they have four times as much butter on average, 2 to 3 times as much cheese. Those are all fat-laden foods. But interestingly, they only have less than 20% the amount of sugar that we North Americans have on a regular basis. Perhaps that's why they're not as fat or as afflicted with the same diseases of modern-day civilization as we are. We'll be right back with more Transforming Health after these messages.
A fresh look at today's health. Voice America Health and Wellness.
Did you know that the environment may play an ever-increasing role in a sluggish metabolism, which can lead to reduced energy and weight gain? The good news is that the Ultimate Her Energy and Ultimate Male Energy can help combat these negative effects. Please visit www.awakenyourbody.com to find out how you can once again look, feel, and perform in a youthful manner.
Are you finding fitness a chore? Is health and nutrition too time-consuming for you? It doesn't have to be like that at all. Tune in to Fit Fan for Fun Lifestyle Fitness with your host, Shira Litwack. Every week, Shira and her guests will show you the fun side of fitness. We'll invite you to send topic suggestions and questions via email, as well as call into the program. You'll get sensible fitness and nutrition advice in a relaxed and fun program. You won't look at fitness as an enemy ever again. Fit Fan for Fun airs every Thursday at 1 p.m. Eastern, 10 a.m. Pacific on the Voice America Health and Wellness Channel. Mark your calendar and set an alarm so you do not miss the highly acclaimed talk show, Holistic Living with Tina Marie and Todd Allen. Tune in every Tuesday at 1 p.m. Eastern, noon Central, and 10 a.m. Pacific for inspirational, oftentimes edgy discussions on all that life brings our way, with celebrity guests, world-famous authors, and everyday people dedicated to sharing positive, uplifting messages. Tina Marie and Todd Allen bring you the very best in talk radio discussions, guaranteed to make you smile.
Your life, your health, your network. You're listening to Voice America Health and Wellness.
This is Transforming Health with host Brad King. Our program will open up your youthful energy potential and help you live a disease-free life of abundant energy and vitality. Now, back to the program.
Hey everyone, welcome back to Transforming Health on this beautiful Wednesday. You know, whenever I have a topic on obesity, I mean, the time just flies by, especially when I have a guest as well-versed in the science of obesity as I do today. If you're just joining us, we're talking about the present condition of the human species and how we are getting fatter and fatter with each passing year, not to mention more and more confused with how to get out of this weight gain mess that we're presently in. Contrary to popular belief, portion sizes haven't grown as much as we think they have, or perhaps they haven't even grown at all. Films like Super Size Me have given us the impression that we're fat because of our sparse dinner plates of long ago, because they're now overflowing with mountains of greasy fare. While the billions of gargantuan fast food meals handed out through drive-thru windows in the last couple of decades have definitely lent a hand, it's not the excess calories these foods contain that are really responsible for making us fat. In fact, since the mid-1970s, the calories we eat per meal haven't changed that much. What has changed is the composition of the nutrients of what we shovel down our gullets and how that composition affects the way our body uses fat for energy. The foods we choose to consume have an incredible impact on various hormones that tweak the metabolic machinery to either manufacture copious amounts of fat for the next famine, and we're going to talk about that next, or stimulate the body to use that fat as energy, in which case you don't just end up looking better, you're going to feel better as well. In other words, the sum total of all of the calories you consume doesn't always dictate whether you're going to be super lean or super fat, but the composition actually does. Please welcome back former professor of physiology and the author of Fat Won't Make You Fat. Dr. Coyne, let's get right into this. You know, tell us about the problems, the trap, I believe you call it, the calorie counting trap that millions of dieters fall into every year and which keeps them fat and confuses them even more.
Well, yeah, and it's, in some senses it's complicated, in another sense it's not rocket science. It's relatively easy, but the first thing I always try to point out to people is let's understand that weight is made up of a lot of things, not just fat. You know, all the way from the weight of your hair to your bones, your muscles, there's the fat, there's the water, and there's the other things that you deposit in the bathroom when you go there. They all make up fat, or make up weight, rather. And when people concentrate just on weight, as some of these charlatans who advertise, you know, losing 7 pounds in 7 days do, there's physiologically no way you can lose 7 pounds of fat in 7 days, even if you're on a starvation program, because that's just too many calories. So it's usually other things that are being lost, and it's not fat. So that's the first thing, is that understand that weight and fat are not the same thing. Probably the biggest issue, the other issue on the calories is that not everybody uses calories in the same way.
Right.
For starters. I mean, I lived on a ranch for many years, and there were hay burners and there were keepers. some people can eat a ton of food and gain nothing because they're very inefficient in their extraction of the calories. And other people eat a few calories and extract every calorie there is in it. And those are all hormonal differences, and we don't know how to fix those for sure. But what we do know is that when you eat carbohydrates, they are all digested into sugar, glucose primarily. And that's whether the carbohydrate is a carrot, a piece of broccoli, or a sugar cube, or a piece of cake, or ice cream, or whatever it is. It all becomes glucose in the gut.
Just at different intervals.
Before it goes to the blood. But, yeah, somewhere along the line, that's what it becomes. When we elevate our glucose, we stimulate the pancreas to release insulin. And everybody's heard about insulin. In my book, I call it the good guy, bad guy chapter, because you die without it. But excessive quantities can give you some serious problems. And the role of insulin is to remove the sugar from the blood and put it somewhere in the body. And the first thing it does is travels around the body to see how the sugar stores are. And the sugar stores are in the form of glycogen. And they're in the muscle and they're in the liver. And liver glycogen is one of the little short-term mechanisms. There's not a whole bunch of it there, but the little short-term mechanism, when I talked earlier about maintaining blood sugar for purposes of the brain, while the other mechanisms kick in to convert fat and protein into sugars when you need it. And then the second one is the muscle glycogen. Now, when sugar goes into glycogen and is stored in the muscles, the only way it ever comes out is for that muscle to exercise. Muscle glycogen never comes out to become blood sugar. And so if you're an athlete, for instance, and you've had a couple of hard days workouts, quite a bit of your carbohydrates or your blood sugars will be converted to muscle glycogen to restore that storage thing.
Right.
But if you're an athlete that's just had 2 days off, and you eat the same amount of carbohydrates as you did on the 2 days you were working out, you're going to gain some fat because you don't need it in the muscles. Liver glycogen got topped up quick enough, so the rest of it is going to go to fat.
But doesn't this, isn't this the underlying problem? Because, you know, let's talk about, let's face it, the majority of people that are listening to Transforming Health right now, I'm not saying they're not healthy. A lot of them are very interested in health.
Yes.
But let's face it, most of them are probably not athletes, and many of them perhaps don't even exercise. And that would represent the great majority of North Americans who just say, oh, you know, I don't have time to exercise, or for whatever reason they don't exercise, or they don't exercise the proper way, and we can talk about that a little later. But the point is, from what you're saying, and correct me if I'm going in a whole different direction here, but if people aren't maintaining the proper exercise and really maintaining muscle tissue, because when you talk about good weight, you're really talking about lean body mass as opposed to the excess fat that we don't need.
Right.
And those people, just going through the aging process, we're going to lose muscle, so we have less of a capacity to store those sugars, which in essence means we have more of an ability to store fat. Is that not right?
Well, that's absolutely true. There's two parts to that also. One is we have less capacity to store the sugars, so it's going to get converted to fat more quickly. But the other part of it is that resting muscle loves to burn fat. And so one of the major advantages of exercise in weight management is not so much that you burn tons of calories, but it's that all day long, just to stay alive, your muscles continue to burn fat. Your whole metabolic rate goes up a little bit.
Right.
And that's one of the advantages of the exercise. The reality is that in the exercise part, in weight management, exercise is only about 20% of the solution. And I wrote an article once called, Want to Lose Weight, Do the Math. There's about 120 calories of energy spent while traveling 1 mile. And that happens whether you crawl it, walk it, or run it. It's still 120 calories to move that body that mile.
Right.
There's 3,500 calories in a pound of fat. And so, in other words, to burn that pound of fat, you're going to have to travel around 30 miles.
Right.
And so, consequently, the idea of losing massive amounts of weight through exercise in a short time anyway, it doesn't work.
Well, this is why people get so frustrated when they only do cardio types of activity.
Yes.
They're never going to see enough of the fat coming off.
No, that's right. So they need to do some muscle activity that builds some muscle, because then it will burn fat for a longer period of time. That's the important issue. But the other facetious response is that there is no exercise program that will fix stupid eating.
Yeah, well put. It's true, though.
And no,
Let's just clarify this because we only have about a minute left.
Yeah.
And, you know, you brought up a very important point at the beginning. We have a limited storage capacity for sugar. Anything over and above what the body can't use, and if we're not exercising, we're using a lot less than people that are actually moving their body on a regular basis or people that have understood the importance of muscle. So what happens is a lot of people just don't have enough of those storage containers, which means anything left over gets converted into fat.
Right.
Now, you said that, you know, all carbohydrates, whether it's a carrot or whether it's, you know, something like a candy that you're eating, it's all the same thing at the end of the day. It breaks down into sugar, but you're not saying not to eat carrot. You're saying that it breaks down in different intervals, so some of those carbohydrates are actually very important to the body.
Oh, absolutely, and there's the issue called the glycemic index, which I think we're going to talk about here sooner or later.
Right.
Which prevents the spiking of the insulin and so on. Absolutely. And there's other nutrients in colorful vegetables, even though they're carbohydrates.
So let's talk about that as soon as we come back. We're going to go out for a break right now. When we come back, we'll talk about, you know, what are the good carbohydrates not to be afraid of. And let's really get into the fats, because people are fat phobic. People are confused about fat. People, you know, I don't know what kind of fat to eat. What the heck is an omega-3, an omega-6, an omega-9? Let's get into that when we get back with more of Dr. Lee Coyne. Fat won't make you fat on Transforming Health Today.
A fresh look at today's health. Voice America Health and Wellness.
Are you in pain? Do you want more energy? A stronger immune system? Rarely does nature reveal a therapeutic agent so incredible that medical researchers and the people who try it are astounded by its health-enhancing benefits. Introducing Leaf Source, a mineral product that is derived from a 100% natural, organic, prehistoric seabed deposit. To find out how Leaf Source can help you, visit www.leafsource.com.
Ask Theo Live is talk radio like you've never heard before. Following her near-death experience, world-renowned author and spiritual medium Sheila Gillette became the direct voice channel for Theo, a consortium of 12 archangels. Through this unique channel, Sheila and her co-host Marcus Gillette present you with an opportunity to speak directly with Theo live on air on any topic you wish to discuss, including receiving authentic messages from deceased loved ones and angelic guides. Get the answer you need by tuning in to Ask Theo Live Talk Radio. Tuesday mornings at 8 a.m. Pacific Time, 11 a.m. Eastern Time on 7th Wave Network. Are you ready to get freed up? Join Dr. Jennifer Freed, one of America's leading psychological thinkers, for a groundbreaking program with fascinating guests and full participation from you. Freed Up will explore topics like liberation in long-term relationships, parenting in the 21st century, comfort in stressful times, and much more. Tune in to Freed Up every Wednesday morning at 8 a.m. Pacific Time, 11 a.m. Eastern Time on the Voice America Variety Channel, and wake up to the heartbeat of your life.
Your life, your health, your network. You're listening to Voice America Health and Wellness.
This is Transforming Health with host Brad King. Our program will open up your youthful energy potential and help you live a disease-free life of abundant energy and vitality. Now, back to the program.
Welcome back to Transforming Health. North Americans are getting progressively fatter every day. In the United States, over 60% of the population is considered overfat. We're not overweight, by the way. And more than 50% of Canadians are too fat for their own good, with one quarter of them being visually and clinically obese. Every year, the problem is worsening. In fact, even though we've indulged in copious amounts of delicious, low-fat, no-fat foods that seem to line almost every shelf in our grocery stores today, our obesity rates have increased by a whopping 50% in the last 25 years alone. Since 1991, obesity has increased in every state of the United States and every province of Canada, affecting all races, age groups, and educational levels. In other words, fat does not discriminate. And here's the kicker. More than 300,000 adults die in North America every single year from conditions that are directly attributable to obesity. By the way, those are mortality figures one might expect from a major war. The take-home message is clear. Instead of allowing our diets to control us by placing our bodies into a continual fat storage environment, it's time people learn to control their diets and thus the fate of their own metabolisms. To discuss this today is my guest, who is a former professor of exercise physiology and nutrition and the nutrition coach to many high-performance athletes, including several Canadian Olympic teams. Please welcome back the best-selling author of Fat Won't Make You Fat, Dr. Lee Coyne. Dr. Coyne, let's get right into this. A couple of years back, there was a science reporter you and I have spoken about, a lot of people may know of. Gary Taubes was his name. He wrote an article in the New York Times, which started out as, what if it's all been a big fat lie? And that later became the best-selling book, Good Calories, Bad Calories. And Mr. Taubes, he questioned both the efficacy and health benefits of a low-fat diet and suggested that science may better support a high-fat and a low-carbohydrate diet. But weren't you one of the first to expose that lie?
Well, I guess I was, without realizing that that's what I was doing, by stating the fact and putting that title on my book. Nobody else had put that kind of a title on the book. Taubes wrote his article approximately 3 years after my book first came out. And that's when you and I had first met, by the way, was, I think, the year the book came out, which I think was 99.
I think it was 99.
Yeah, I think so. And that also, by the way, was the first marathon I ever ran, which was why I was in Victoria visiting you at that time.
How did you do in that marathon?
Well, I survived.
So you didn't win, but you did well.
I've run 8 marathons since then. I'm now 72 years old.
Wow.
My joke is that I always have a goal of same day finish, in a marathon. I just do it to do it.
Okay. Well, let's talk about the dietary fat, because, you know, the book is, it's not misleading, but I think it confuses people, because fat won't make you fat. So what are we talking about? Dietary fat? Explain to the listeners why the majority, not all, but the majority of dietary fat really doesn't contribute to body fat.
Well, there are several reasons. The first one I mentioned earlier was that fat is the energy source of choice of a resting or mildly exercising body, unless you have messed with your insulin by eating too many carbohydrates, in which case you're in fat storage and can't burn fat. And I also put the little rider at the bottom of it, not all by itself, in the title, because, you know, calories do count, even though I don't count calories in any of my programs.
Right.
Kind of thing. But the other issue about fat is that fat actually helps to control appetite. And in what they call isocaloric studies, where using the same number of calories and one being predominantly carbohydrate and one being predominantly fat and protein, you will find the fat and protein diets, people actually eat less, or they don't want to eat. They're not hungry. So they have trouble keeping it at isocaloric compared to the carbohydrate diets. And, there's a silly old joke about Chinese food. They say about how, doesn't matter what you eat with Chinese food, you're going to be hungry in an hour anyway.
Right.
And, of course, they're talking about the rice and noodle Chinese food.
Yes.
If you ate Sichuan or Peking, where it's predominantly a protein diet, that doesn't happen.
Because you're stimulating a different hormonal response. Tell us about that hormonal response. I mean, you mentioned insulin.
Yeah.
Insulin, which, drives the sugar into the cells of the body, out of the bloodstream. But that also, it stimulates a very specific hormonal response that is responsible for putting us into fat storage.
Well, that's absolutely right. If you eat high glycemic index carbohydrates, which means they raise your blood sugar very quickly.
Give us a few examples.
Well, corn, instant rice, rice cakes, worst diet food ever made in the world.
Yeah, packaged cereals that we feed our kids.
All the box cereals.
Yeah.
White breads, even most of the whole wheat breads. I mean, the glycemic index, A glycemic index of 100 is what sugar is, meaning 100%.
Yep.
White rice is typically in the 70s, but instant rice is like in the 90s, which means it's 90%, raises the blood sugar 90% of what sugar does. White bread does about 72% of what sugar does, and if you go to the typical whole wheat breads, it drops to 69. Like whippy-ding, you gain 3 percentage points.
Exactly. It's still not good.
But if you go to sprouted wheat bread, it drops to 25.
Right.
25% of what sugar does. You know, one-third of what white bread does. And so all of these things have a bearing on how fast the blood sugar rises. Now, the significance of that is blood sugar rises quickly. The pancreas releases insulin in response to the rate of the rise more than to the quantity of the rise. So if it's going up quickly, the insulin comes out very fast, and it always comes out more than what you need. Then your blood sugar drops because the insulin is very efficient in getting the sugar out of the blood. So the blood sugar drops, it's way down. The insulin is still up there. And when I draw that curve, I point out the difference between these two equals hunger, because your insulin is still up there.
And the constant cravings for more sugar to feed the brain.
Absolutely.
Okay.
And
so,
the second part of that is that if you're craving sugars all the time, you're probably low on protein and fat in your diet.
Okay. So now let's look at protein and fat. When you're eating, as opposed to just eating carbohydrates, when you're eating protein, you're actually creating a counter-regulatory hormone response. Tell us a little bit about that and why that's conducive to more energy production coming from fat.
Well, the main reason is that you control the insulin. You don't let it rise, and you let the other hormone from the pancreas, glucagon, come out, which is a fat mobilizer. And those are the fundamental differences, is that if you mobilize the fat, then you'll burn it. If insulin is up, you can't mobilize it, so therefore you can't burn it.
So when we're talking about fats, give us an example of the fats typically that won't make us fat. I mean, obviously, if you eat too much of anything, there's always that risk of becoming fat. But what are really the good fats?
Well, again, this is becoming a more clouded issue than it was 20 years ago also. But Tobbs, in his book, points out, as he reviews this whole fat thing, and I knew this from having known some of the scientists who were actually involved in the study, the famous Framingham, Massachusetts study, which started in 1950 and went into the 70s, where they recorded everything in the whole community of Framingham, about 10,000 people, recorded everything longitudinally over the years, could find no correlation between cholesterol or saturated fat and obesity or heart disease. They could find a correlation between calories and heart disease and obesity.
Right.
But not from saturated fat and not from cholesterol.
And this was the big thing. If you remember going back, I don't know, maybe it was 20 years ago, when you went to the movies and you bought popcorn, they were actually, you know, there was a lot of hydrogenated type of coconut oil, and that's where coconut oil got this really bad rap at that time.
Yes.
Of being dangerous. But coconut oil is a saturated fat, yet it's one of the best forms of saturated fat for the body. So what's your opinion on that?
Yeah, no, actually, I agree with this. The body uses saturated fat quite easily and doesn't have any particular problems with it. All of these original polyunsaturated fats that came out, and this was in response to the cholesterol and saturated fats scare, which has almost become a religion, but these polyunsaturated fats can easily turn into trans fats, which means you move a hydrogen from one side of the molecule to the other. And
you're talking about vegetable oils primarily.
Typically, the vegetable oils. That's where you get the polyunsaturated. Yeah,
right.
Yeah, but many of them were touted as the answers to preventing heart disease, and yet they didn't change the heart disease picture one bit when the grocery stores went all the way from one extreme to the other. And we now understand that they probably cause more harm because trans fats are toxic. They punch holes in cell walls. They cause damage.
And a lot of this research was done by Dr. Mary Enig, where she, you know, she spoke about how the vegetable fats are correlated with the rise in not just obesity, but also cancer.
Yes.
But, you know, it's exactly what you're saying. It's the unnatural, the trans fats, the hydrogenated, the partially hydrogenated fats that are found in baked goods, breads, crackers, chips, cookies, pies, donuts.
Yeah.
I mean, the list goes on.
Yeah, they're all basically unnatural sources of fat. You see, in 1900, the median percent, or the average percent fat in the North American diet approached 50%. Today, it's around 32%. The American Heart Association actually calls a 30% fat diet a low-fat diet. So, on the average, the world is on a low-fat diet.
and yet we're getting
They're not getting any results out of it whatsoever.
Yeah.
You know, sooner or later, the light bulb has got to come on.
Break. We're going to come back with the final minutes of Transforming Health, Dr. Lee Coyne. The book, once again, check it out, Fat Won't Make You Fat. We'll be back with more of Transforming Health after these messages.
Opinions, options, answers. Voice America Health and Wellness.
Did you know that the environment may play an ever-increasing role in a sluggish metabolism, which can lead to reduced energy and weight gain? The good news is that the Ultimate Her Energy and Ultimate Male Energy can help combat these negative effects. Please visit www.awakenyourbody.com. to find out how you can once again look, feel, and perform in a youthful manner. Are you in pain? Do you want more energy? A stronger immune system? Rarely does nature reveal a therapeutic agent so incredible that medical researchers and the people who try it are astounded by its health-enhancing benefits. Introducing Leaf Source, a mineral product that is derived from a 100% natural, organic, prehistoric seabed deposit. To find out how Leaf Source can help you, visit www.leafsource.com.
Frankly Speaking About Cancer is a program designed to empower survivors and their caregivers to deal with the social and emotional challenges of cancer. The show will invite physicians, researchers, nurses, social workers, patients, and caregivers to share their advice on how to live a better life with cancer. Join host Kim Tibaldo, President and CEO of the Cancer Support Community, Tuesday afternoons at 1 p.m. Pacific Time and 4 p.m. Eastern Time on the Voice America Health and Wellness Network.
Opinions, options, answers. You're listening to Voice America Health and Wellness.
Is Transforming Health with host Brad King. Our program will open up your youthful energy potential and help you live a disease-free life of abundant energy and vitality. Now, back to the program.
One of the main reasons so many people fail at losing body fat and maintaining a healthy metabolism is because they don't understand what got them to their present condition. It's important for those who are serious about living a long, lean life to first know how and why your body stores fat, and more importantly, how do you mobilize this fat and create energy from it? It's really about balance. Any program that is overly restrictive or promises ridiculous results almost overnight is set for failure. What you need are effective, proven, but doable strategies that you can adhere to for life. As long as you're willing, able, and ready to apply a healthy fat-reducing as opposed to weight loss strategies to your life, I can almost guarantee that you will finally be successful at losing fat for life. Please welcome back former professor of physiology and the author of the best-selling Fat Won't Make You Fat, Dr. Lee Coyne. Dr. Coyne, I wanted to clear this up because there are listeners where I know they hang on specific words, and when you use things like high glycemic or the glycemic index, people go, oh, yeah, I heard about that before. I got to hear what this guy says. And then, you know, we may not get into that enough. So I just wanted to say, you know, the newer science is not so much about the actual glycemic index of a specific food, how quickly it breaks down into sugar, but more more about the importance of what you're combining that food with, which is a glycemic load. Can you talk about that quickly?
That's a good point, Brad. And the glycemic load is fundamentally, let's put it this way. Watermelon has a really high glycemic index, so, you know, approaching 80, 70-something or something like that. But the actual number of grams of sugar that's in watermelon is relatively small because it's mostly water. So the glycemic load of a big chunk of watermelon at over 70 might actually be less insulin stimulating than something that has a glycemic load like, say, corn, which is about 60, I think, or bananas like 55, but are primarily carbohydrates.
Right.
So the glycemic load would be much higher for the same weight of banana as watermelon, but the load would be much lower for the watermelon than it would be for the banana.
So that's
an important distinction.
And the same thing would be if you're eating a banana, you're going to get the whole glycemic index of that banana and the load of that banana.
Yes.
But if you're blending that banana with protein and a fat source, obviously you're changing the overall constitution of what that represents.
Yes, that drops the glycemic index and the glycemic load of the meal by adding protein and fat to it.
Right.
And my fundamental rules with my clients is protein in every meal and every snack, and eat some of the protein food first.
And is that so you start to create that hormonal chemistry?
That's right. You control. I mean, the original appetizers were pate and shrimp and crab and things like that. They weren't quite buns and Coke.
It sounds good. Can you give us a quick example of just give me an example of a breakfast that you would recommend to one of your clients that would be fat loss friendly but energy producing at the same time?
Well, you know, you could have any meat with or eggs. Actually, here's a good one: two poached eggs on two slices of sprouted wheat bread. Now, sprouted wheat bread has 6 grams of protein per slice in it, and a glycemic index of only 25.
And you're getting the fiber, correct?
So you're getting fiber.
Yeah.
You're getting the protein in the bread, and you add some more protein with the egg. And so for an average person, two poached eggs on two slices of sprouted wheat bread is actually a very good breakfast.
Right. Yeah. One of the things I have when I'm on the road is, understand that I work out very, very hard. I'll have 5 or 6 poached eggs, full eggs. I don't take the yolks out or anything. I eat them like that, and then I'll have a bowl of oatmeal with some berries. And, you know, I find that's a really good way to start my day off. I'm not saying, you know, if you're not exercising as intensely as
I am. If you want oatmeal, good old-fashioned oatmeal with a protein supplement on top of it.
Yes.
And just mix it in with the oatmeal.
Yeah.
Is also a good option for a slightly lower calorie.
Because the fiber is really the brake system for the carbohydrates, and I think that's really the difference when you talk about glycemic index. It's the foods, you know, these processed foods that have been stripped of their fiber that are the quick releasing carbohydrates. You add fiber back in, just like the sprouted wheat has more fiber in it, and you're always going to have a lower glycemic index. Let's talk about this. What about fruit intake? Because you recommend fruit. I recommend fruit, primarily from the berry family. But there is such a thing as people having too much fruit because of the fructose that could potentially be problematic. Can you talk about that?
Yeah. There's several points about that. The berries are the best choice. Berries and apples, they have the lowest glycemic index of the fruits. But they are still primarily carbohydrates. They are great delivery systems for other nutrients. That's what colorful fruits do. But they are still primarily carbohydrates, which can elevate your insulin very quickly.
Right.
And that's what the high fructose corn syrups and these high fructose things, that's one of the things that they can do.
Yeah, and that's why these dried fruits that people subsist on when they're dieting. It's probably one of the worst things they can do because there's so much fructose in dried fruit.
Yeah.
And if you look at, you know, through most of our history, it's believed that we had maybe half an ounce or 15 grams of actual fructose a day. And today we consume, on average, 3 ounces. So
yes,
we're consuming six times the amount that we consume.
Yeah, that's 90 grams. Yes.
Yeah, it's way too much for physiology. We only have a few minutes left, and I have to take advantage of your background as an exercise physiologist, and some of the athletes or some of the people who do exercise very intensely, who do carbohydrate loading. You know, I have a run tomorrow, or I have to go to the gym, I better load up on my carbohydrates the night before. That kind of goes against what you're saying. So what's your take on that as an exercise physiologist and also someone who's done all this research on fat chemistry?
Right. Well, in general, I'm not a big fan of carbohydrate loading, and I actually was a personal friend of a couple of the scientists, Saltin and Ostrand from Sweden, that actually first introduced the concept. But they have later said that in most cases, it was not necessary. Now, just prior to an endurance event, it's okay to, quote, top up your glycogen stores and your blood sugar with a high carbohydrate meal, like a higher carbohydrate breakfast, but don't ignore the protein. But generally speaking, carbohydrate loading 1, 2, and 3 days beforehand are actually counterproductive. They'll actually have you gain weight from two points of view. One is you'll put on some more fat, and secondly, you'll store more water, because elevated glycogen stores require more water to go with them, so you'll end up weighing a little bit more.
So do you think it's fine, even if you're having a very hard weight day, or you go for a few sprints or even a long run, not to have a lot of carbohydrates even right after that exercise is completed?
Well, immediately after, for optimum recovery, you want the research demonstrates consuming approximately 3-to-1 ratio carbohydrate to protein.
Right.
For optimum muscle glycogen and branched chain amino acid recovery.
So that's the exception.
That is the exception. Now, but the other part of that is, though, it must be digested fairly quickly, and there's a bit of an over promotion on milk as chocolate milk as source. And of course, they have ignored that chocolate milk is sucrose sweetened, and that it takes longer to digest than a good recovery drink kind of concept.
Right, so make your own, obviously.
Yes.
Dr. Coyne, this hour has literally flown by. The information is absolutely fantastic. I mean, I could have a conversation with you all day about this, so I'd definitely like you to come back and we can do a part two of Fat Won't Make You Fat. We've been talking to Dr. Lee Coyne. The book, Fat Won't Make You Fat, check it out. His website, www.leanseekers.com. Dr. Coyne, take care of yourself. You're an example for the older population. I mean, chronologically, you're getting up there. Biologically, you're probably, the machinery is in tip-top condition. So bravo to you.
Thanks very much, Brad.
You take care of yourself. And we'll be back with more of Transforming Health next week. You will not want to miss this show. Go out, have yourself a fantastic day.
Thank you for tuning in to Transforming Health with Brad King. Be sure to join us again next Wednesday at 3 p.m. Eastern Time, noon Pacific Time, on the Voice America Health and Wellness Channel. Looking forward to next week. Now, with your newfound energy, go out and make it work for you.